Good morning, listeners, and welcome to WHTC Money Matters. This is Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. You almost forgot the name of our show.
I did. I just stuttered, and I was off and just thinking about something else here, Jack.
All right. Hey, we're pre-recording this show for January the 4th, which is the New Year weekend, which is really good. So, hey, our show today is pre-recorded. It's on Social Security. We're not going to go through any market. We're not going to go through any questions. The whole show is going to be with Von DeVantil, who's been on the show probably 10 or 15 times over our eight-year period. Vonda, welcome.
Thank you.
It's good to be back with you.
It's a good sign when you have me come back, right?
It is always a good time.
Okay.
Always a good time. No, we just push the button.
That for Jack's benefit.
Yeah.
So.
No, we just push the button and you give us all that we need, which is awesome.
Oh, well.
All right, so we're going to talk Social Security. Let's go right back to basics. You know, I get this question all the time. You know, Social Security's going out of business. Let's talk about that.
That we're going out of business?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a typical thing, you know, especially for people who are, you know, younger. It's not going to be there. You know, what are we doing? We're not fixing it. Give us kind of an update from the big picture.
Yeah, well, it's no different than it has been in the past. You know, we're obviously not 100% solvent indefinitely, but who is? So we're no different than the private industry. We need to make changes so that we continue to be solvent into the future. So right now where we stand, you know, we're completely solvent until 2033, and then we're no longer capable of paying 100% of the benefits that we owe. So obviously we don't want to reach that point where we tell people, okay, now we're only going to pay you 79% of your benefit instead of the full benefit. So in order to not get to that point, the government does need to make changes to the system so that we continue to be solvent beyond 2033. So we just want changes to be made, maybe now and gradually in the future, so that one generation doesn't get hit hard with a drastic change. Changes that take place over time are usually much better and easier to absorb.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you heard of any of the changes that they've discussed in the past or what might be considered?
Well, they've discussed almost every option you could imagine, but not anything beyond discussion point.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, we actually cover that information on our website. We actually have a section on our website that talks about, you know, the various changes and, okay, if we did this, you click on it, it'll tell you how that will help us in the future, how much further solvent we are into the future. So, you know, we do cover all that information on our website, but unfortunately there's nothing beyond that we can do because we aren't the agency that makes the decision.
Sure. Yep.
It has to come from Congress.
Right. But that's so good. I didn't know that that information was out there on the website. That's just good to go and check out what has been discussed. Yeah.
But, you know, we listen to a lot of national speakers at our national conference in San Diego or Boston, Chicago, and Kerry and I hear speakers all over the time, and they say, you know, their comments are, don't worry about Social Security. We've been here before. We've always fixed it. You know, we've always gone forward. We have 20 years to fix this. It's not a problem. You know, we're going to do this, this, and this. So just forget about it. It's solvent. Continue on. Keep paying. Which, if we get to the next question, there is going to be an increase. Speaking of how to solve this, there's going to be an increase for 2014.
Yeah, we do have a cost of living increase scheduled for 2014, and it's 1.5%.
Okay.
Which our beneficiaries will receive in the January benefit, of course, that comes in their February check for January. So, yep, cost of living increase, always a nice thing for individuals.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's just the way it works.
Yeah, and it's not a guarantee. You know, it used to be we could almost safely say, yep, every year you're going to get a cost of living increase, but as you know, it hasn't been every year any longer. So when we do get a cost of living increase now, it's kind of a refreshing, exciting announcement for our beneficiaries.
What's that cost of living increase based off of, Vonda?
The cost of living is, first of all, we don't determine the cost of living increase. It's determined by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it's based on the Consumer Price Index. So it is directly tied to the Consumer Price Index, and it goes from the third quarter of 2012 through the third quarter of 2013. And then in October, they typically announce if there's going to be one or not.
Okay.
Because October is the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Now, there's also going to be a price increase for the people who are paying in. So every year, I think it's in 2013, it's about what? You pay Social Security up to about $113,000?
Yeah, the maximum taxable earnings also goes up. It's a little bit of a correlation there. This year it's $113,700. So it's about, you know, the higher wage earners, it's around this point where they're starting to make about that much. After that, they don't have to pay the Social Security tax. And the Social Security tax is 6.2%. The Medicare tax is added onto that, and that's a 1.45% tax. And there's no limit on that. You pay 1.45% into the Medicare trust funds for every dollar that you make. But for Social Security, you don't have to pay that 6.2% after $113,700. And next year, that's going up to, next year, I should say, in 2014, that's going up to $117,000.
Yep. So that's a little bit more money coming in.
Yeah. Not a lot,
no.
But, you know, a little bit, right.
Sure. Yep.
It's not going to make a dent into the issue at all.
No,
but,
no.
You know, that is something that does always go up as well.
What about SSI? Does that go up across the living as well or no?
Yeah, the SSI benefit also goes up. This year, the federal benefit rate for an individual is $710. And in 2014, it's $721. And then for a couple, the federal benefit rate in 2013 is $1,066 a month. And in 2014, that will be $1,082 a month. So, okay. Again, a little bit of an increase. Not a dramatic one, of course.
Sure,
but yes,
sure.
It has gone up.
Well, maybe we ought to back up and inform our listeners what exactly, I use that term SSI. Maybe we should talk to our listeners about what exactly is SSI.
Right. That's always a good place to start because, you know, SSI to me is just common everyday language and also to you all. But for most people, they don't know what SSI is. In fact, a lot of people, when they ask me questions, they'll say, yeah, I'm getting SSI and I want to do this. You know, they're not getting SSI. They're getting Social Security, but so many people refer to Social Security as SSI. But they're not the same thing. Social Security and SSI are both administered by the Social Security Administration. SSI stands for Supplemental Security Income, and it is completely separate from Social Security benefits, but yet it is administered by the Social Security Administration. SSI is a needs-based program. You must have limited income and limited assets to qualify for SSI, and you also must be blind over the age of 65 or disabled, one of those choices. So it's not for everyone. You obviously have to meet the criteria of the limited income and assets, and you also have to meet that criteria of being either blind or over the age of 65 or disabled.
Okay. Yep. That's for everybody to know. I mean, that's if you don't make the minimum, you need to apply for this, and it's for lower income people, which is really a help.
Absolutely.
And
you know, there'll be people that file for Social Security retirement. You know, maybe they're 62. They file for Social Security retirement. They've never been married. Their benefits, you know, quite small. If their benefit is below that SSI federal benefit rate, and that's their only income, when they turn 65, they need to file for SSI. Say their Social Security is only $600 a month.
Right.
The SSI benefit rate in 2014 is $721. So SSI can supplement that $600 an additional $121.
Right. And that's a very good thing. And I still don't think a lot of people know about this.
No. The limits are very strict. I mean, it is very low income. Unfortunately, there's not like a sliding scale either. It's really black and white.
Yes.
You either meet it or you don't.
Right. No, that's a good thing.
Well, Vonda, this past week I actually had somebody in my office that was looking at their Social Security earnings report and benefits online because I showed them where to go and how to find it and that they weren't getting their paper copies anymore. But he mentioned he thought it looked like there was a mistake. And how does a person go about getting a mistake corrected on their earnings report on the Social Security?
Well, if they have proof, it's really easy. And when I say proof, I mean a W-2. Or if they're self-employed, we need their Schedule SE from their tax return along with proof of payment. So if they have their tax returns, it's very easy to get it corrected. If they don't have their tax returns, it doesn't mean they're out of luck. It just means that we're going to have to look into it a little bit deeper. If the employer is still around, we can contact the employer and see if they have records. We can look at their historical work pattern. Have they worked for that same agency before and after that year, so we can maybe kind of guess how much they made that year? There's a lot of ways that we're going to work with somebody on giving them credit for the year that they worked.
Okay. And would that be a call into a local Social Security office or dialing an 800 number? Or?
I mean, if you had a client who, say, was missing 2011, mm-hmm. and they have their W-2, you could just fax that W-2 into the Social Security office, you know, with a cover letter saying, hey, here's my name, Social Security number, the year of 2011 is missing, here's my proof. We'll add it right there and send a letter saying, hey, we gave you credit for 2011 of this amount. If you have anything else, let us know.
Okay.
So if you have proof, it's super easy. You can drop it off. You can fax it, whatever you choose.
Which in this case, I think the person did, and I just said call the 800 number, and you guys would direct them from there.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Mm-hmm. All right,
we'll
let's
give
go back
the fax number or the address of
okay.
the office.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to statements. People who are under 60, 59, and under do not get statements. And
we don't send Social Security statements out any longer.
Yeah. So that's for everybody. Is that for everybody?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that for everybody, Vonda, or just under 60?
Well, we stated earlier that we were going to send paper statements out to individuals 60 and older. And then it became a budget issue for that, and then we chose just a select few that we were able to send it to. So I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know who's getting the paper statements any longer because it's constantly changing. But what I tell people is even if you get the paper statement in the mail, you're still going to want to register for My Social Security. So maybe you're not registering because you need to see your statement, but you're going to want to register because you're eventually going to be getting benefits from us. And when you register for My Social Security, you have access to your record. You can change your address, your phone number, your direct deposit. You can look at your historical payments records. You can look at your next payment information, the gross amount, the net amount. And when I say gross and net, we don't take anything out, but Medicare does. They take out their premiums. If you have an overpayment, we might be taking out some money for the overpayment. So all of those details you can obtain if you have a My Social Security account.
All right, Vonda, hold that thought. We need to take a break, and we'll be back.
Listeners, you've been listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. We'll be right back in 1 minute.
Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. We have a special guest with us today, and I have also Jack sitting right next to me. So, Vonda, thanks again for being on our show with us. And we're talking about Social Security, and we're talking about paper statements. And I had another question this week, actually, in my office. A person went on to that because I directed them how to get signed on, file, and find their earnings report and all this. But he didn't feel comfortable in entering his Social Security number online.
On
the Social Security website.
That's good.
And he asked, is there any way around that? And I said, I don't think so. But
boy, if that's...
but you need to enter that information to get signed on, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, he can bypass the registration process by walking into a local Social Security office.
Okay.
You meet a representative at the front desk, and you give him your driver's license, and we'll register him for him. It's like a 1 minute deal. We'll register them, and then he can create his own username and password. And then at that point, whenever he wants to go to My Social Security, he just goes to socialsecurity.gov, signs in using his username and password. And he's all set.
Okay. Yeah, for those that, you know, because we're always told, too, don't put information like that out there on the Internet or don't answer an email with your bank account number. So, I mean, he's doing the right stuff by being cautious.
That's a whole other. If he's not comfortable doing that, that's totally fine. And to bypass that, just go into the office and we'll register them for them.
Okay, that's good information.
Yeah, good answer. Okay, let's go back. How do you get to the website?
You type in socialsecurity.gov and make sure you're typing in GOV at the end. Otherwise, you're not at our website.
Right. I always tell people SSA.gov.
Yeah, we don't use that URL. I mean, the URL is interchangeable with socialsecurity.gov.
Yep.
It's just that for marketing purposes, we don't use it anymore because people don't understand what it stands for.
Sure,
but
sure.
Either one is fine.
Yep. And that's, I tell people, we have most of our people 50 and over, we want them to go get their statements, because at 50, you need to start looking for your number. Your number is, how much money do you have? What's it look like when you get to be retirement age? What retirement age is? Social Security, how does that blend in?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important for our listeners out there to begin. 50 years old is the minimum age. You need to get that statement and look at it.
Are you saying,
absolutely,
Jack, I need to go out and look at
I
it now?
I think, Carrie, for all our listeners, Carrie is over 50 now.
Yeah.
So that's very important. That, yeah, I can help you with that, Carrie.
Oh, I appreciate that, Jack. You know, Vonda, he always says at every radio show that I'm slightly over 50 now.
Yep.
So
he is joining that
Why
group.
Do they always feel like they need to remind us when we turn a certain age?
Yeah.
We don't need reminders.
No, it's just another number. Hey, you know, what do you find is the average out there? And maybe you know the statistic or not, but what's the average age that people are starting to take Social Security benefits? Or do you find more and more people are waiting to 65, or still the majority still taking it at 62?
Yeah, I don't really have statistics on. I know the agency has statistics, but they don't provide them to us because they don't want us to maybe push one age over the other by saying, you know, 90% file at this age. We're not given that type of information. So it's hard for me to say what the average is at this point, but I can tell you from, you know, 22 years of experience, when I first started doing the public speaking, everyone wanted to hear about age 62.
Mm-hmm.
Now when I'm doing my public speaking, everyone wants to hear about age 70 and the delayed retirement credits. It's a much more intriguing thing than it was back in the late 90s when nobody even wanted to hear about delayed retirement credits.
Yeah.
So we're shifting a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we're telling all the people. It's we don't look at the Social Security number first. We look at that last.
Mm.
And, you know, if you're at 62, you take a 25% reduction on your maximum age. If you're 65 or 63, it's 20%.
Mm-hmm.
64, it's 13.3. And at 65, it's 6.7 for those people who maximum retirement age or full retirement age, I guess that's the term, is at 66. And at, you know, Carrie, you might be 67 because he's just 50.
Mm-hmm.
At 62, you get a 30% reduction. Those are big numbers.
And they're permanent. You know, that's a permanent reduction. And that's it seems like that would be common sense, but I have to remind people all the time, that is permanent. You don't come back in when you're, you know, 66 and say, okay, I live that long, I need the boost. There is no boost. You file early. It is a permanent reduction. So, and here's the other thing. We give an 8% boost per calendar year for delaying.
Mm-hmm.
An 8% boost is a pretty generous.
It's a very good
increase.
Rate of return, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So,
all right,
yeah.
Let's go back into, you know, we always go over the thing called file and suspend for couples. It's always one of those things that after this radio show airs on January 4th, and remind people this is a taped show, that we have lots of customers call us on Monday after the Saturday show. What's that file and suspend again? Well, between the show airing, the taping, and getting to Monday, we've probably forgotten.
Yeah, right. Well, the first thing I'm going to say about that is, the good thing is everything that I'm talking about is exactly from our website. And everything that I'm saying can be verified online, including the strategies, if you will, that we cover. File and suspend is one of those strategies, and those are also found on our website. So if the listeners are listening and they're like, wait a minute, I need to hear that again, I'm pretty sure that might help us, you can go to socialsecurity.gov, and you just click on the tabs at the top. There's the third one in. It's called Benefits. You click on it, you click on Spouses, and it's right there, written quite clearly on how these strategies can help individuals. So the file and suspend is something that you can do only if you're at full retirement age or older. And that's the first clarification I need to make, because a lot of people want to do file and suspend when they're 62, 63. You can't. In order to suspend your payments, you have to be full retirement age or older. Now, why would somebody want to suspend their payments? Some people could actually suspend their payments at 66, even though they've been getting retirement benefits since the age of 62. They have a 25% cut in their benefit. They've been collecting that all along. Now they're 66, and they don't really need that money at that point in time, so they suspend their Social Security. They can unsuspend it when they're 70, and they'll have an additional 32% added on to their benefit. It's not added on to their full benefit because they took a reduction, but they do get 32% added on to their benefit that they're collecting. So that's something that we don't even really talk about a whole lot, is people just suspending because they want more later. The most common reason to file and suspend is so that your spouse or maybe your children can come on your record. So, you know, let's say I'm 62 and I want to get spouse's benefits on my husband's record because my benefit is peanuts, but my husband doesn't want to file because he wanted to wait till he's 70. Well, if he doesn't file, I can't get a dime on his record. So if my husband is 66 or older, he can file. By filing, I now can come on his record and get spouse's benefits. And by suspending, he can get 132% at age 70. So that's kind of the premise behind the file and suspend strategy.
And it is when both spouses are at full retirement or just one spouse?
No, just the person that's actually suspending has to be full retirement age.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, on your website, you said the information's all there.
Yes.
Can you actually enter your numbers and the site has software will estimate and show you the different parameters? No. Okay.
No. Social Security explains everyone's options, but we don't get into the advising end of it. And I always explain this to financial planners when I'm training, is I'm training financial planners because that's where everyone's going for their advice, because we can't give it. We can tell people all these options, but when they say, well, I don't know what's best for me, well, here's your numbers. You need to figure that out, because we can't advise.
Yeah,
so
you know,
I do know there's software on the Internet. I don't personally promote that because it's not anything to do with Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
I could not say if it's accurate or not, but there's definitely information out there like that.
In one of the strategies that my wife and I are going to take, Vonda, is we're both the same age, basically. We're born on the same day, but 3 months apart, is I plan on filing and suspending at 66 when she's full retirement. She gets half of mine. Then we both take each of ours at 70.
Yes. Yeah, now you're throwing in two strategies.
Yep.
So you're going to utilize file and suspend. You're going to file and then suspend so that she can come on your record. Assuming she's full retirement age, she can tell Social Security, I don't want retirement. I just want spouses. And that's called restricting the scope of the application. She's restricting her application to just spouses. And by doing that, she gets 50% of your benefit, and then when she's 70, she switches to her own and gets 132%. And then you also unsuspend your benefits and get 132%.
And that's really a crucial thing to think about, is each one of these is a scenario in itself.
Yeah.
And one of the things is, you know, we're always trying to figure out with couples, how do we get raises throughout your life?
Mm-hmm.
So if you retire early, you know, we're again stressing the fact, because we can give advice, stressing the fact that, you know, if you're going to retire early at 62, well, let's just plan on maybe one of you taking retirement at 66, one of you taking retirement at 70,
mm-hmm.
and give yourself an increase, you know, every 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's a good strategy that's out there, that, you know, everybody's different. I mean, you know, and you talk about that, as you present the facts. You go to somebody that's going to help you with those decisions, but
mm-hmm.
everybody that listens to this radio show is unique in themselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's
most
important.
What works for one couple might not work for another. You know, somebody might really need money now versus being able to afford to wait until later. You know, that's okay.
Yeah,
Everyone's situation is different, and there is no right or wrong answer as far as what one does.
Exactly.
We don't know when we're going to die. We just can make estimates and plan accordingly.
Oh, Absolutely. I mean, we're all unique. Hey, Vonda and listeners, we're going to take a short break here. We're going to be right back. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey will be back with one more segment with Vonda Vantil.
Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to the last segment of WHTC Money Matters. This is your host, Kerry Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. Today's show, we're talking about Social Security the whole hour, 45 minutes. And we have Vonda Vantil on the line. Welcome back, Vonda.
Thank you.
We've talked about how you get your statements, some of the basics. Maybe we need to get, down a little bit deeper. And you got any other things that, I got other questions here, but let's talk about the next problem people have is when they retire early and they're not at full retirement age and they want to keep working. Tell us about what happens if they make over a particular dollar amount.
Sure. If they earn if they file prior to their full retirement age, they have limits. And all these earnings limits are for all years prior to the year someone turns their full retirement age. So this pertains to widows and widowers who might file as early as 60, to spouses at 62, retirees at 62, all the way up until the year they turn their full retirement age. And the limit is quite small. In 2014, we just had an increase in that limit, and it's $15,480. So, somebody who's been collecting Social Security retirement for a couple years decides they want to get a little part-time job to make a little bit more money, and they make, $20,480. They've made $5,000 over that limit. And they do have to pay back $1 for every $2 that they make over the limit, so they would owe Social Security $2,500. We can withhold their Social Security benefits until we recover $2,500. They can pay us $2,500, or we can have a small portion come out of each of their monthly payments until we recover $2,500.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who don't. I mean, that's one of the issues that people don't realize. And I imagine when they come to sign up, you review all of that.
We do. We explain that they have limits, but typically they're not listening too much because they don't think they're ever going to go back to work at that point. And then, of course, things change, and for one reason or another, they do go back to work. And then another thing that happens is they make over the limit, but they never hear from Social Security. So they think, must be they don't know about it.
Free pass.
A year later, they still don't hear from us. Oh, must have got away with it. What they don't realize is that we do find out about it because we interface with the IRS. So all wages get posted to us. It's just that we don't find out timely. It takes 2 years maybe sometimes to find out about it. So it will catch up with you. It's best that you just report it right away. So if you go to work, you get a job, and you estimate that you're going to make over the limit, call us up. Call our national toll-free number up. We have reps there 12 hours a day. And just say, hey, I might make around 20 this year. And then we can adjust the payments accordingly so that you don't have a huge overpayment at the end of the year.
Good thoughts. Mr. Right. Cooley.
Well, I have a question, dealing along those lines is, taxes. And people always ask, and I'm not the CPA here, but should a person have federal taxes withheld on Social Security, or is it taxed? With Social Security, what's taxed, what's not?
Right. And that's a great segue from what we just talked about, because people get the two confused. What we just talked about was your annual earnings limits, if you will. In other words, it's like a Social Security rule that we have. It has nothing to do with the IRS. If in that example I gave earlier, if somebody, made $5,000 too much and they owe Social Security $2,500, that doesn't have anything to do with the IRS. You're not going to show that on a tax return or anything. That's just a Social Security law that we have. Another issue is taxation of your Social Security benefits. And there's nothing taken out of Social Security benefits as far as taxes go, but that doesn't mean the IRS doesn't want to know about all of the income that we have coming in for tax purposes. So we do send 1099s out every year, and the 1099s will display how much someone has received in the previous year. So in January to February, we typically start sending out those 1099s, and you will have to, there's a little chart on the 1099 that you fill out to figure out if you're going to have to claim your benefits as income on your tax return. Some people have to claim up to 50% of their benefits. Some have to claim up to 85% of their benefits, depending on where they're at with their income. So, for example, if you have a individual paying taxes and their income's $25,000 to $32,000, they'll have to claim 50%. So you file a single tax return and you're making between $25,000 and $32,000, you're going to have to claim 50% of your Social Security benefits as income on your tax return. And if it's over that, it's 85%. So it just might put you in a little bit higher tax bracket is probably a simple way to explain it.
That's good. Yep, I think that's very understandable. I people fall into that trap every year, and I mm-hmm. think, you know, we've had some people who, I've had at least two that have got that tax letter 2 years later, and, you know, it takes them another 2 or 3 years to pay it back,
mm-hmm.
or they don't get a check.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
yeah.
those are some very important things. And Carrie just brought up a good one. You just finished it about people don't realize that when you get to a certain level. And today it hits more people than ever that you're going to be taxed on some portion of your Social Security, 50% or 85%.
Yes, yes. And you can have taxes withheld from your Social Security benefits. We're talking federal, not state. You can have federal taxes withheld if you end up, you know, having a heavy tax burden at the end of the year. And you can have 7, 10, 15, or 25% of your benefit withheld for taxes.
All right, let's go to the next thing that people forget about is once you turn 65, you start getting a deduction for what we call Medicare. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yes. If you file for Social Security benefits, you're automatically in Medicare A and B, and you're going to start having a premium withheld from your monthly Social Security check beginning with the month you turn 65. And Part B is $104.90 in 2014. It's the same rate as it was in 2013. You don't automatically get that Medicare card if you're not getting Social Security benefits. So, in other words, people that are listening and they're like, well, I'm 66 and I've never filed for Medicare. What does that mean? If you're still working for a large employer of 20 or more employees, you don't need Medicare when you're 65 because you have insurance through your employer. So in that situation, you can sign up for Medicare once you retire from your employer. But if you're not in that situation, say you're working but you don't have insurance through your employer or it's a small employer, then you need to actively sign up for Medicare a couple months before your 65th birthday. It's only automatic for people who are getting a monthly Social Security benefit.
Okay. That's a good thing people know. All right, let's go to the next level. Let's talk about survivor's benefits first, and the next one, marriage. So let's go survivor first.
Okay.
Survivor meaning,
yeah.
You know, dad dies, leaves a wife and children. Children who are under 18.
Mm-hmm.
18 and under.
Yep. First of all, the funeral homes in Michigan all notify Social Security offices of death. So we do get alerts from the funeral homes indicating the individual's passed away. We always screen that to see if the individual is getting benefits, and then we terminate their benefits. And then we also look for potential beneficiaries as a result of the death. Potential beneficiaries would be minor children under the age of 18, or children that were disabled before the age of 22, but they're adult children. Or we have widows and widowers benefits payable as early as 50 if they're disabled, or if not disabled, as early as age 60. But to get the widows and widowers at that age, of course, you would have to be making under that limit that we talked about earlier, the $15,480.
Okay. And children, how do children get paid that are under 18? You know, how does that work? What do they get paid? How long does it last?
Minor children qualify until the age of 18. And then if they're in high school full-time at the age of 18, they get them until they're 19 or graduate, whichever comes first. And it's 75% of whatever the deceased beneficiary's benefit would have been. So, you know, say their benefit would have been $2,000. the survivor would get 75% of that. Unless there's typically more than two on the record, then we have to take the family maximum and divide it by the number of eligible individuals. So if they had four minor children when they passed, we would just take the family maximum and divide it by four.
Okay. And those could be quite sizable numbers.
Very much so.
Yeah. Right.
Very much.
We're getting near the end of the show. We have a couple minutes left. Let's talk about marriage now. Because, you know, there's a lot of people that ask this question. You know, I am drawing my husband's benefit. I didn't really work too much. However, I'm going to probably get married in the next year. And, you know, these people are between 65 and 80. What happens
so
if you remarry?
Are you saying they're a widow? Or?
Yeah, they're a widow. I mean, collecting on their husband's benefit, their first husband's benefit.
Okay.
And they're deceased, and now they're thinking about getting remarried.
Sure. Yeah, if you're getting a widow or widower's benefit, you can remarry after the age of 60, and nothing happens to that widow or widower's benefit. And, of course, you can remarry after 50 if you're getting a disabled widow or widower's benefit. If you remarry prior to the age of 60, your survivor benefit is terminated. Of course, you could file for spouse's benefits on your new spouse's record, but the current survivor benefit would have to be terminated.
Sure. Okay.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense.
Really?
The question that comes up once in a while, and I know this is a quick answer, can a person have their Social Security benefits garnished due to debt collection?
No. The short answer is no. You can have your Social Security benefits garnished if it's a government creditor that's coming after
like
you.
The IRS.
Otherwise, a financial creditor cannot garnish your benefits.
Okay, so like the IRS can come after you.
Absolutely.
And taxes. Vonda, as always, we want to say thank you for taking some time out of your day and spending time to educate our listeners. So thank you for being with us today. And listeners, you've been listening to WHTC Money Matters with Carrie Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. Vonda, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it, as always.
Yep. Thanks, Vonda.
Stay tuned next week. Guide to the Markets on January 11th. Have a good weekend.